There's a period of time that for about 8 days, my breathing is getting so slow. Then it's like a dead person. Now, normally we do 4 or 5 breaths a minute, right?
Yeah.
How about 1 or 2 breaths for an hour? It looks like you're not breathing at all, right? So actually we have it saying is this is like a small death because you're artificial dying. But it can happen that the small death turns into big death, meaning you totally die. A lot of masters, like in Yangtze River, there's sections over there. There are many caves.
The 7 chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My 7 Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jai Kumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My 7 Chakras, my7chakras.com, the show where we help you calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss. In today's episode, we talk about some really profound and amazing topics, such as energetic activation, fasting, and its spiritual significance, the crucial role that darkness plays in our evolution, Qigong and the cultivation of subtle energy, and the embodying that state of flow, not just when you're practicing Qigong or meditation, but embodying that state in your day-to-day life, right? So you are absolutely going to love this episode, and I've got some questions and themes and areas that I would hope for this interview to go in. So if you like the work that we do, then make sure that you hit the subscribe button right now, because it does something to the algorithm and it helps more people see this post, see this podcast, right? So make sure you hit the subscribe button if you're on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you're listening to this stream on. Make sure you support us in that way and share this post. With that being said, let's bring on our special guest for today, Robert Peng. Robert Peng is the founder of Elixir Light Qigong. He began his Qigong apprenticeship with the legendary monk Xiao Yao when he was 8 years old. As part of his training, he did a 100-day water fast in a dark underground chamber, which we are going to explore. As part of his training, from this experience, Robert developed extraordinary spiritual powers and healing abilities. He teaches and lectures all over the world. The essence of Robert's teaching is reflected in the Master Key Qigong Secrets for Vitality, Love, and Wisdom book, CD, DVD series, and in his 14-week online course about the ancient classical practice, Yi Jin Jing. So, I hope you are stoked and excited as I am. Robert, welcome to our show. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you, Aditya, for the invitation. Yeah, it's been a while that ever since the last time I do the podcast with my friends. Yeah, we did quite a few. But all these 2 years, we are doing more online Zooming in and out of the workshop. So exciting experience for me. Yeah, thank you for the invitation.
You're very, very welcome, and I'm very excited as well. You know, me personally, my goal is to take this podcast on the road so that I can meet people and have these sessions in person, because I feel that the energy is very different when you're meeting somebody in person. But I'm also at the same time grateful for all these different technologies like Zoom and other softwares that can make this conversation possible and allow somebody like you in New York to chat with me across the continent in Vancouver. So super excited that you decided to appear on our show. We usually, you know, like to start from the very beginning. So Robert, where were you born and brought up, and what was your childhood like?
Yeah, I was born in China, in Hunan. Maybe people don't know where Hunan is, but if you know Chairman Mao, Chairman Mao, he's my country fellow. Actually, his hometown is about 20 minutes away from my home. So very famous for spicy food. Yeah, that's where I grew up, and in 1960s. Yeah. So at that time, I don't know whether you know Chinese Cultural Revolution. It started in 1966, so I was still a few years old. So in China, they call 1966 to 1976 the 10 years disaster, because a lot of things are ruined, are collapsed. Yeah. Religions were banned. Economy are very, very low, and there's a lot of struggle. Anyway, yeah. So when we were born, we're very confused. Yeah. Because when our good teachers are righteous, which is like nailed down, they're not supposed to do good. So, but this one thing, yeah, one thing in my mind is that I always want to learn some martial art. As a boy, it's always happened like this. But unfortunately, when I was 8 years old, that's my second primary school, I got sick, very severe chest pain. Like if I run, especially if I jump from high place to a low place, the pain is so excruciating that I may pass out. So the doctor, of course, gave me prescriptions one after another. It didn't help. And the doctor gave me the best prescription. He told my mother, well, maybe your son need to have a break from school, like to have sick leave for at least half a year, that meaning one term. And of course, for me, actually, I was happy, because as a boy, and especially at that time, you know, in China, in the school, you don't learn anything. And so I said, well, I can quit school. That's beautiful. So I was supposed to stay at home resting. Of course, as a little boy, I couldn't. Yeah, I tried to behave for 3 days, because my mother, my father, my brother, they go to school, they go to work. The whole complex, because we have a few buildings together, was empty. Yeah. Like, it's so lonely and frustrating. So on the third day, I have to sneak out and begin to wander outside of the room, outside of the house. So not too far from my house, from our buildings, yeah, there's a receptionist. Actually, it's a VIP hotel surrounded by the wall. You know, in China, people like to have wall. So when I was with all the other kids, because we have 18 families for that building with other kids, the whole playground are like with the children. But when it's school time or like work time, nobody was there. So I tried to jump into the wall, because we're not allowed to get in as a little boy. And even if it is very painful, I want to take the risk. Yeah. Because even inside there, they have a lot of fruit trees, swimming pools. So it's like another world. Because that VIP receptionist was built for the Soviet Union engineer at that time. They came to China to help us to build this factory, because our hometown is Chairman Mao's hometown. Politically, they say Chairman Mao's hometown should have a steel iron and steel plant. So the Soviet Union engineer come and helped build up, so that is housing them. But of course, afterwards we broke up, and that become a VIP receptionist. So it's very beautiful, very beautiful. Then at the corner of that campus, there's a red brick building. Then I went there, peeping from the gate, from the door, and saw a middle-aged man was shoveling the coal, feeding the coal to the furnace to build, because it's a boiler room. And that boiler room is providing all the hot water for all the different buildings inside the campus, for them to have hot water, to have steams. And so that's what boiler room is for. And I went there, and this middle-aged man, I peep, then he turned around and greeted me. Yeah. Oh, you want to watch the fire? I think a lot of other boys maybe come and watch. Yeah. Come and sit. Yeah, and watch the fire. Don't get burned. That's the first conversation we have met. And actually, this man was my master later. Nobody knew at that time. Nobody knew he's like hermit. Nobody knew he's like top martial artist. He can disable a fierce animal just with his bare hand. And then can break the whole skull. And also a legendary healer. He's like a legendary healer. But at that time, he's just like a hermit. Of course, later I begin to know. Yeah, later I begin to know. But at that time, he's just like a middle-aged person. But actually, he's already like 80 years old, more than 80 years old. But he looks really young, right, for his age. And for him, he may have a million reasons to be upset and angry, because all his life, he was in a monastery, a meditation, practiced different kung fu and qigong. But in 1966, actually, exactly 1968, the monastery, because China banned the religion, so the monastery was taken over by the villagers, and they drove all the monks away from the monastery. And of course, the other monks, they may have a place to go, like they may have brothers or families, so they return to their own normal life. But my master, he's an orphan. He grew up in the monastery. So he has to wander around, wander to my hometown, which is an iron steel plant, and find this job, a boiling room worker, which is very low pay, low social status. People complain about hard work, but that is his home. Yeah. So after first meet, then he said, welcome to come again. Then later when we are familiar, I said, you are just being polite, right? You didn't know that I do make the trip, make the visit every day, seeing ever since, because I didn't go to school. Yeah. So we begin to make friends. Yeah, make friends. At that time, I still don't know he was a Qigong master. But I felt strange at first, because after we greet each other, he said, well, what's your name? I say, my name is Peng Jihui, and why did you go to school? I got sick. Then he scanned, he just looked at me for about 5 minutes, no talking. Later, I know, actually, at that time, he's doing a healing. Yeah, with his, we say, the power of gazing, the gazing healing. And I think in about 2 or 3 weeks, I can recover without noticing that. When you have pain, you always know, because when you move, you know that.
Yeah.
But when it disappears, I forgot. Until one day, my mother asked me, say, oh, poor boy, how are you doing? How's the pain? Oh, pain, it's gone. It's gone. So, of course, that is all the story afterwards. When we met, then we begin to exchange each other. Then we meet again and again. He began to tell me some stories. He didn't tell the others. Actually, he's a wonderful storyteller. Yeah, he told me the Buddhist story. Actually, a lot of it is Buddhist story. He told me about the Monkey King. Yeah, which is very famous classic books in China. Then I went later more for the story than for the fire. At first, I liked the fire. Then one day, from nowhere, he asked me, say, do you like wushu? Wushu means martial art, kung fu. Yeah, in wushu. Do you like wushu? I say, yes, yeah. Do you want to practice that? I said, of course, but I couldn't find a teacher. I can teach you. You can teach me? I have a big question mark. He doesn't look like muscular. He's like my height and doesn't look like, a bulldozer. Yeah, not like a strong person at all. I said, can you do that? I said, you'll see. He said, you'll see. But at least two things to keep in mind. One, discipline. You have to come here every day in the morning at 5 o'clock. Practice a few hours with me. Second, even more important, keep secret. Don't tell anybody you're practicing with me. Because it can be very dangerous if we got caught that I was learning from him. At that time, there's still some martial art teaching, but the spiritual practice was banned. Like Jet Li, you know Jet Li? Jet Li is 1 year older than I. He grew up in Beijing, and he went to the martial arts school. Yeah, he went to the martial arts school, and he won a few champions of martial arts. Yeah, it's more the form. But when I was practicing with him, it's a lot of meditation. We have to burn the incense, or the rituals, which was not allowed. So it can be very dangerous if we got caught. So I said, no problem. I kept secret, even from my parents for the first month. Yeah. That made my mother a bit puzzled and worried. Because before I was lazy, when it's time, need to get up, you know, I just don't want to get up. Now, every morning, before they get up, I got up, disappear for a few hours, then coming back hungry. So one day he asked me, what on earth are you doing every day in the morning so early? Oh, I was jogging. Yeah, I lied to her. But I noticed that she was not convinced. Then I told my master, my parents got a bit worried. He thought a while, then he said, well, ask your parents to come to see me tonight in the boiling room. So I said, okay, So I told my parents. At that time, he didn't give the name of Xiao Yao yet. It's Mr. Tan. Yeah. As a Mr. Tan, the boiler room attendant invites you to go to see him. My parents were very confused. They said, why did he want to see us? We do know there's a very good boiler room attendant, very good temper and always ready to help smile, but we don't have any connection with him. But they made the trip. I followed them, get into the door, try to get in, but my master stopped me. No, you stay outside. And they three chatted for about 2 hours.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Then my master and my parents went out, very excited, but also a bit nervous. Then told me, as well, keep up with the master. Yeah, keep up with the master. We'll keep a secret for you too. Yeah. So that problem is solved with my family. Yeah. So I kept practicing with him for nearly 10 years. Yeah, 10 years. And every day in the morning, the first exercise he taught me was horse stance. Horse stance, not a high position. It's very low. It's nearly 90 degrees bending with the knees. Yeah, when he showed me then, after he said he did this for 20 minutes, after 2 minutes, you begin to feel your thighs are like burning, you're shaking, you sweat, your teeth are clattering. Until he said, okay, finish, 20 minutes, I collapsed. Then every day before I started practice other things, I have to stand doing horse stance for about half an hour. It's like a torture. Yeah, before I taste some other sweet things. So I was a little bit confused. I said, well, is this just a bully and not really doing something to me, teaching me something valuable? But, of course, he teach me all the other eagle claw, yeah, long fist, short fist. The amazing thing is that we don't have too much weapons. We don't have sword, which is not allowed. The only one where is the axe, right? Yeah. Then the broom. But he taught me to use the broom like a weapon. Oh, amazing. Yeah. Chopsticks, pick up. And he showed me one thing later, because when he find I'm a bit confused, he want to show some power. Then he said, give me the rope. Then he gave me the rope. Then he take out the rope, projecting the chi. The rope is soft. Then when he project the chi, the rope began to straight out. Oh. Yeah, like a stick. Then he stab it on the watermelon. Yeah, that's summertime. And go through the watermelon with a rope. So the rope with the projection of the chi become hardened and like a stick going through. That made me stunned. Yeah. Then another time he showed me even more amazing things. Yeah. That really made me convinced. And because that is already, I think it's about 2 months. I was still in my sick leave. Yeah. One day we were practicing at night. He took off his shirt, then told me, he said, get an axe? Yeah, yes, I'll get an axe. Hit me on my chest. I said, chopping, actually, not hit. I said, really? He said, yeah. Then, of course, I follow, then I do, boom, like, you know, very intimidatingly. And nothing happens. He said, make it harder. And of course, first time they didn't have, then try harder and harder. He said, as hard as you can. I try very, very, really hard. It's not like chopping on his body. It feels like chopping on a wood. Bounce back. Hurt my hands. Then afterwards, just like a white mark, then disappear. More amazing things. He said, put on the button. He said, follow me. So we went out of the boiler room. There are trees were surrounding them. then in one of the trees are the mark of my chopping. That sounds a little like mysterious or mythological, but that is what I experienced. I was like stunned. Of course, later when I practiced, you know, it's called 小搬运. It's like you can, by mental power, you can move something. So the moment when I was chopping him, he moved the tree to in front of me. And when I chop, it is really chopping the tree.
Oh, I get it. I get it now.
Yeah.
So he took you outside, and the chopping was happening, but the marks were happening on the tree outside.
No, when I was chopping on his chest,
yeah,
that is inside the room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he moved the tree into the
I get it.
Into the room.
Yeah.
So when I chop, it is chopping the tree. Then it's moving back.
That is crazy.
Like some people, you can bend the
light. That's
the
like time, magic almost,
bend
right?
the space.
Yeah.
So it's like he can bend the space.
Oh, my God.
And then I said, oh, my God, I want to keep going. Yeah. So I was even more diligent. Yeah. Even
right.
more brilliant. The horse stance, yeah, at first, yeah, so hard. Yeah, so hard. Then one day, when I was doing the horse stance, I was expecting some hardness because shaking, pain, sore. Then I was in a trance. I get lost to myself. So when I come back from the trance, my master was very happy. He said, do you know how long you hold this position? I said, how long? 4 hours. The position that I hold for half an hour is like the hell. 4 hours is like nothing. So actually, it's ever since I begin to feel that on my core of lower dantian, in my lower torso, there's a force always helping to stand. So when I stand, it feels like you're sitting on a chair. Yeah. So you're holding this all the time. Then the horse stance become like my suite instead of torture. Yeah. And in his spare time, sometimes we went to Zoom or went to the park. Sometimes we have some fun. One time we went to a Zoom and he showed me something I really love. He, because, you know, in the zoo, at that time, you know, even the animals doesn't have a lot of food. They're very lazy. The lion was lying there. Then he said, we need to do something to make him, like, show, right? So he projected chi with his palms and sword finger on the ass of the lion. The lion at first lying there so lazy, all of a sudden jump up like someone's choking, like he's poking on him, walking here this way, the other way. It's fascinating. Then we went to the mountain of monkeys, a lot of monkeys doing this. Then he projected, they said, let's get some order. So they're all queuing, rolling this way, the other way. So it's like in a circus. He has the way of like special dimensions of communications with the different species. Yeah, amazing, amazing person. I was so fortunate that, yeah, I can have this chance to meet my master.
That is so fascinating, a topic and a story. And I'm sure that our listeners are also, you know, able to listen and take in all of that, all of what you shared so far. And as you were sharing your story, what it felt like was like a movie where sometimes you have this oppressive government that, like you said, they did these things in the monks. And then there's this undercover hidden master who is working in the boiler room with so many secrets, so many abilities, waiting for the right student to come across his path. And it sounds so fascinating the way you shared it. And of course, the abilities, like you mentioned, of being able to withstand so much pain and difficulties and struggles. And at the same time, using the chi to not just for strength, but also to influence other creatures, other animals, and I'm sure other beings, human beings, as well. And I can't wait to, you know, dive deeper. But, you know, before we proceed, you know, you have this quote, this saying that says, when the student is ready, the master will appear. So how true is that? Do you believe that that is true in your case as well? And do you believe that you were sort of ready in that lifetime, or maybe in a previous lifetime, you had done a lot of, you know, spiritual work or had gone through a lot of challenges, difficulties. And then because you were just 8 years old, you were presented with an opportunity to interact and meet with this master. where somebody else, maybe if they're 45, 50 years, they don't have these encounters. It's not very natural and normal, right? That you met somebody who not only had the knowledge, but was willing to teach you as well. And this is like very esoteric, very advanced knowledge from what I understand. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do agree. Yeah, I do agree. Like when you're ready, or actually in Kung Fu, or including in Qigong, there's a saying. It say the normal masters, the disciples, look for the masters. But the grand master, the real true high masters, they search for their disciples. Meaning they have the wisdom eyes to find who is talented. In that movie, actually, that shows that in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, you know, that master was begging the girl to be his disciple. Of course, that is the movie, but it is true that the masters are searching for someone. Well, my story actually is like that. My master lived in the mountain, deep in the mountain, very, very remote. All his life, if it were not the Cultural Revolution, he will live all his life in that mountain, not dealing with any modern people at all. All his disciples, the other disciples, are all villagers or mountaineers. Yeah. So I'm the only like city boy. Yeah. Not grown up locally over there. So the chances for him and me to meet actually is very thin. Very, very thin connections, but it happens. So for me, sometimes I say, the Cultural Revolution is a 10-year disaster for China. But for me personally, it's like a blast, because without that, we won't be able to meet. And when he was teaching me for 10 years, yeah, we are like, actually, he's like my second father. You know, I spend more time with him than with my parents. Yeah, we're always together, I bring my sweet potatoes, you know, roasted in his furnace. We share a lot of things for fun. Of course, we have very hard practicing time as well. But when he left, yeah, like 1979, yeah, 1976, the Cultural Revolution finished. Then it took a few years to reform in 1979. One day, he sent me a telegram. Yeah. Before that, I think, whoa, this is a beautiful life, because after half a year, I totally recovered and I began to went back to school. So I was living a double life. Like, I go to school as a student. Then as soon as I finished school, I went to him and practice. Nobody knew. In the morning, I go to school. I hear the bell ring of the school, which is only 5 minutes away. Then I go to the school. So I enjoy that life and think that it will be forever. Yeah. Then until one day he showed me the telegram, I said, well, I got a telegram from the monastery, from the abbey of the abbot of the monastery, and asked me to return. Then I realized that we're going to say goodbye. It's a very sad moment, yeah, very sad. Then he said, well, we're together almost every single day, and well, now you can visit me to the monastery, yeah, in your summer or winter vacation. So that's how we begin to separate, yeah, separate. Then I went to visit him after he left, and that, it's like, I have to take 8 hours train, 2 hours bus, then hiking for about 5 hours to the monastery, yeah. So it literally take me like nearly 2 days to arrive to him. So that's where how remote it is, how rare the chance we might meet each other. And also that when I was in my high school, he always urged me. He said, no matter what you're going to major, make sure you attend the university, meaning you should have higher education. For me at that time in 1982, I attended entrance exam for the university. It's a very severe competition. Like we have 2 million people involved with the entrance exam, the whole nation. Only 5% was enrolled in the university. He said, I have a mission. I know you're going to have a mission. You're going to use that someday, but make sure you have high education. I don't mind what you major. You major in mathematics, you major in science, you major in social science, whatever, but you should have high education. That's my request. So, oh, good, good. Then you know what? You know what I major? I majored English. Yeah, because when I started to learn English, I began to love English, even in high school. Yeah, because I have another beautiful teacher. We have 45 minutes of the class. He'll spend only 20 minutes, finish the contents of class. Then another 25 minutes, he tells us stories. One way he tells the stories is that he hold a book in his hand, read English, then only translate it. Beautiful story. So at that time, he began to tell the Hamlet, the prince and the pauper, and the three men on the boom. So all through this. For me, I look at the books in his hand and say, one day I want to be able to read the book in his hand. But 3 years later, I can. And then I say, I want to major English. So I didn't know at that time that now I'm using it to teach Qigong. Imagine if I cannot speak English, it is impossible for me to take this as a mission to share such a beautiful wisdom and practices from our ancient masters.
That is very, very profound wisdom that your master shared with you. And I think some masters have the wisdom to see into the future and sort of know what type of skills you'll require, not just the skills of healing or martial arts or the practice itself, but also other tools that will help you spread the wisdom, without which, you know, you would not be able to have that much of an impact as you are having right now. Now, I do want to speak about something that you did, I think, earlier on when you were learning from the master, which is the 100-day water fast. Now, I do intermittent fasting. And so I skip my breakfast and I have my first meal by about 1:30. And I've been doing this for the last, at least 3 to 4 years. And I love it. And in fact, last year, I did a 3-day just juice fast. It was difficult in the start, but I did it. And I noticed that my whole body was feeling very different at a very cellular level. And even still, a 3-day fast is like a beginner's fast. Right? It's not a real proper fast. And you did 100-day only water fast. So talk to us about that experience. What was the journey like?
Well, that journey actually started, I would like to trace back a little bit before that, because when I just started with him, I was practicing martial arts. I was not really practicing the healing Qigong. Yeah. So of course, we have a lot of breathing to make myself stronger and the resilience. And then I learned all different forms and I'll break them up so that you can make use of. Then I get pride. I want to find some chance to fight because I like testimony. But I got into a street fight ever in my life. The first and only street fight in my life. I won, but I feel so horrible. We have hooligans, actually very bad reputation. They are horrible person. Boys, actually, is 2 or 3 years older than I. Then one day, they beat one of my best friends. They ripped out his cap, which is at that time for the children, like precious. Because we all like to have the army cap, army cap. And my best friend, he has one, the real one, because his uncle used to be in the soldier, to be a soldier, so to get a real one. Normally, we can only buy in the department store, which is not so cool. So the reason I'm beating black and white, black and blue. So when I heard this, I was very angry. So I went straight to them and began to get into the fight. I beat all them three. But that kind of sense of winning lasted only maybe 10 seconds. Then I was so scared because I thought I killed one of them. Because I was so angry, I was like a monster. And I broke his ribs. Then I sneak away, of course. They are the neighbor, actually. Then her mother brought him. Her mother come to my home cursing and, just screaming at my mother. And my mother, of course, was very upset. And then they urged me to go to the hospital to see him. Yeah. Actually, that is a transformation part why I begin to turn into a healing process. Because the moment when I entered the room, I saw that bigger boy, one head taller than I, but when he saw me, he was so frightened because, he get that bad impressions that I beat him. But of course, actually, I went there to bring the gift, to apologize. But at that moment, I realized, I said, my God, he's just another boy like me. Why at that moment I treated him like an enemy? So I began to have sympathy in my side. That soft part was inside me. Yeah. Then, of course, the second day when I went to practice with my master already told by my mother, so he was very upset. He said, well, today there's no practice. Your practice is nailed down there on a washing board. I don't know whether you have the washing board. Maybe in India you have a board. They have zigzags to wash the board, to wash the clothes.
Yeah.
So I have to nail down on there for 2 hours. Yeah. Actually, the pain, I was okay. At first, painful, then I get numbed. But I was so, actually, I was so, I hated myself at that time. I let down my master. The last thing is that he felt disappointed on me. He said, you lost emotion. You're not supposed to do like this. But of course, meanwhile, he noticed that I do have a soft heart. So I think it's about just 2 or 3 weeks after, one day he said, well, you have practiced with me for a few years now. I think it's about 2 years time. Many different martial arts. Yeah. He said, well, all the energies that you build up from these forms, you can use it in two ways. One is you can make your punch very penetrative. Yeah. You can project chi very aggressive, and you can make your performance beautiful. Yeah. And if you want to do this, I can teach you more, and you may join with some competitions, be very famous, like Jet Li, right? Yeah. Well, at that time, we don't know there's a Jet Li at that time, of course. Yeah. He said, well, he said, use the same energy, you can go to another road, which is more, actually it's more lonely, but you cultivate your own energies and you can use this energy to do the healing. He was very democratic at that time, yeah. He said, think about for 2 days before you decide. I'm happy to lead you either way. Yeah. Mm. I said, because I already saw him doing some treatment for some neighbors, because some neighbors had come and doing the treatment, and I see how grateful people they are when they get the treatment, get the healings. So I said, Master, I don't want to wait for 2 days. I decide I want to do the healing. I don't want to do fighting. Yeah, we're not saying martial art. I don't want to do the fighting at all. Yeah. He seemed very satisfied. Said, okay, good. He said, then I need to make your energies more purified. Yeah. So he empowered me. Then he said, you should do Biguan. That is 100 days water fast when you're getting a bit older. So that happened after he returned to the monastery. That's a few years already passed. Then when I finished my junior high school, we have a long break, like nearly 4 months break before we went to the city school. I went to the monastery very happy. And I thought, oh, I'm going to have a wonderful so many days and practice different things. Then from nowhere, he said, today we do Biguan. Yeah. Follow me. So I followed with him to the basement of the temple. Yeah. So the only light, this pitch dark, pitch dark. Of course, the first night where we go, we have the torch. But after the torch, I was alone just over there meditating. Yeah. Well, I have water. I have a little bucket for my peeing toilet. Yeah. On the other side, a little mattress. So he come and visit me. Every day, yeah, every day. So it's in the pitch dark. The only light I could see was the lit incense holding in his hands, because each time when he come in, he bring a lit incense. That incense lasts about two or three hours, I think. So we practice together. He guide me practice different meditation breathing. Then he put the incense on the jar, actually a bowl with the rice and stick on it. Then he left. Then I was in the pitch dark myself. Well, the first few days, like you had the first few days is the hardest. I mean, mentally, physically, because first, if you're hungry, the first 20 days, he gave me 3 jujube a day. Jujube is Chinese dates. Yeah. Yeah. So I say, these 3 jujube are 3 meals for you. So chew it, eat it mindfully. So at first, I don't know, but I just swallow it. Then I really be mindful, taste it. Then it's amazing. 1 jujube, I can eat it for nearly an hour and feel so much richer. Yeah. So much rich. And versus now we have, like now we have, oh, beautiful, beautiful buns, but I have never tasted or experienced that kind of subtlety, that kind of richness from 1 single date. Yeah. After 20 days, just water, pure water. Yeah. Pure water. The interesting thing is that what you experience in your ordinary life, you all experience in there, in Big One, in my fasting and meditation. Like meaning, I can feel coldness, I can feel physically itchy, pain, yeah, and hot, cold, all this kind of physical feeling. The physical one, pain, cold, they are fine. The hardest for me is the itchiness. It feels like a million mosquitoes or ants are biting on you. Oh, you want to scratch. But as soon as you move, they disappear. My master says it's a simmo, evil of your mind is making you feel this. Yeah. So then if I shake or it disappears, then I know I'm here doing meditation. Then you get into trance again until you really, they say, a surrender. I go to the hell, I still go, right? I go through the hell. When I begin to open and receive, before I just struggle, fight, it never ends. When I begin to open it, receive pain, okay, enjoy the pain. I enjoy this itchiness. You just embrace all this, then it begin to melt. Then it begin to feel that it begin melting. Then after that hard time, it reverses with the beautiful, beautiful feelings. You know, the sweetness and bitterness, they come in together. The itchiness and ecstasy, they are like just next to each other. You know, like some kind of a perfume. If it is too thick, it smells ugly. It smells horrible, right? Yeah. But when it's thinner, then it's like aroma. So the same thing when you are embracing it and when it melts into you, that kind of pain, that kind of itchiness turns into ecstasy. Then that kind of ecstasy is so addictive. You don't want to get away. Yeah. You was, oh my God, it's keep going. Of course, then it's coming down. And after this, it don't come back again, meaning you go over this. Yeah. If you move, it will come again, until you really go through that torture, then paradise, then you return. Yeah, you return. All experience, yeah, physical and mental, your frustrations, your loneliness, your anger, they're all like just scanning one after another. Until I think it's about 2/3 of the time, I think it's about 50 or 60 days, I couldn't remember exactly. There's a period of time that for about 8 days, my breathing is getting so slow. Then it's like a dead person. Now, normally we do 4 or 5 breaths a minute, right? Yeah. How about 1 or 2 breaths for an hour? It looks like you're not breathing at all, right? So actually we have it saying that this is like small death, because you are artificial die. But it can happen that the small death turns into big death, meaning you totally die. A lot of masters, like, I don't know whether you've been to China, in Yangtze River, there's a few sections. Over there are many caves along the cliff. Mythology, we only say mythology, but it is true. I understand it's true. Some say that is the cave. There's some hermit doing the special meditation there. Yeah. Because normally, if you're in a monastery, like I was so lucky because I have my master, or I have the other monks taking care of you. But a lot of practitioners, they are just themselves. So if they are practicing on the ordinary ground, the wolf, the animals may eat them. They make a cave along the cliff, so no other animals can reach there. So they can be in deep meditation, for months or even years without interruption.
And really quickly, just since you mentioned that, even in India, in the Himalayas, in places like Badrinath and Kedarnath, high up in the mountains, they say that there are sages and monks who are in the caves, like you mentioned, and they are meditating. Even if it's like snow, full of snow, they're still meditating for months, years. And like you pointed out, have you heard of this person called Babaji? Babaji. So he's like a very mystical being. Apparently, people say that he's been living for 400, 500 years. But he, you know, if somebody is somewhere remote in the Himalayas, and if he has that intention, the person might see or meet Babaji. But, you know, like to your point, there's always a risk, right, of animals and, you know, other predators eating.
It's not strange at all. It is true, actually. That is this state. Well, for sometimes, because they are so beautiful and they just die, they don't mind. People, yeah. The practice of death, because they already, I think they understand the death, they accept the death, they don't make big stories about death. For them, the enlightened masters, they're okay. But of course, for me, at that small death period, I was like a dead person. And it is very crucial moment. Yeah, if you don't have another master help you go through energy to pass the crisis, you might die. So my master was with me for all those 8 days. Make sure my energy are keep flowing. Small death, after small death, is big life. Yeah. So the small death period is, we say, is total transformation of your body. So it's like you're totally changed. It's like you have thorough cleansing from every level. Yeah. So when I return back to my consciousness, for that 8 days, I lost consciousness. Yeah, I was like just dreaming. Then when I return, yeah, my master was me. Then he, of course, told me, you are like this for 8 days. Yeah. I was, oh my God. He looked a bit, he sounded a bit tired. Yeah. And then I keep practicing. But after the small death experience, one significant thing I feel is that I feel very light. Very, very light. My meditation room is not big. Yeah. So it's like if I stretch my arm, maybe it is 3 arms wide. Yeah, like a chamber. Okay. Then I feel so light, and it's like you feel light, but meanwhile you feel your strength of tiger, your light as feather. So I begin to, in the small room, I begin to run. Then I run on the wall, like on the side of the wall, then the other side of the wall. So it's like a half open pipe skiing, the ski. So I go this way, and then the other way is for fun. Yeah, for fun. And another thing is that my power of conducting qi are razor sharp. Yeah, razor sharp. I think that's one of the reasons my master chose me. Actually, when I was little, before I met my master, I have a kind of gift. That is that if I concentrate for 1 or 2 minutes, then I use my finger to put on my playmates, the other neighbors, put on their forehead or put on the fingers. They feel static electricity. Yeah, but that's all. That just, it cannot control it. I cannot make it continuously going. But after that, I even zap myself. It goes, it's like, you have constant generating power there. So that's interesting. Yeah. And my master knows this too. He said, well, that is the very precious energy that I cultivated and precious at healing. But you're still a teenager. Try not to abuse it. Don't use it in your healing. You use the other technique until you're more grown up, like you're more mature. Yeah. That is the ability that he sharpened me. Yeah, he sharpened me. And, then of course, about 15 days before we're going to finish for that 100 days, which is the 85 days, he began to bring some juice. Yeah. And the last day he brought a little fruit. Then I went out. Yeah. Of course, it's always in the pitch dark. So I was not supposed to open the eyes to the brightness right away. So I went out in the dark when it's night. Then I went to my bed, sleep. Then they put a little shade. Well, just take me a couple of days to get used to the brightness of the light. So that's how I returned back.
That is phenomenal. I mean, firstly, thanks for sharing. And I'm sure that our listeners are also taking note and really taking in the experience that you shared about what you went through. But, you know, as you were sharing, what came to my mind was, you know, the story of Jesus, the prophet. Because if you think about it, I think he also went through 40 days of fasting with no food. And like you pointed out, he also went through a lot of quote unquote temptation of, right, breaking the fast and, you know, doing something that, like, a lot of internal mental chatter, I'm sure. And, you know, maybe canceling the fast or whatever he went through, you know, those years back, but he went through something very similar. And it just speaks to the spiritual essence and quality of going through this fast. And also they speak about him being in the caves, in darkness. And the other similarity was the fact that he experienced death, but he did not die. And he, right, came out of it. But now, once he came out of it, he was transcendent. He was a different human being. The one who went into the fast, I'm sure, was different. But when he came out, he was sort of like an ascended master. So what you are sharing, it makes so much of sense. And I'm so glad that you had the master with you. Because like you pointed out, you were very close to that. But then it takes a teacher, a master, and somebody who's like a coach by your side to watch you and make corrections maybe, or maybe give you the juice or fruit toward the end of it, as well as not allow you to suddenly see sunlight. Because I'm sure after 100 days, it would have been disruptive.
Yeah, you have to go damaging. Back gradually.
Yeah. That is so amazing. And what I like about, you know, your experiences, you know, it was not just fasting, but it was combining fasting with darkness, which I've studied, you know, create certain chemicals. If you look at it from a physiological standpoint, DMT, they say, in the pineal gland, that creates these spiritual, you know, psychoactive experiences. So that's really fascinating.
Yeah. And it's very interesting you mentioned about pineal gland. You know, in our practice, we call this area in the center around pineal gland, Tianye, because the heaven eye. Tianye. And in Western world, they call it third eye, right? Mm. And some say, oh, it's because the pineal gland. Because pineal gland, they have diseased retina. They do can form a kind of images over there. Yeah. But my understanding, I think, that pineal gland is still part of heaven eye. Yeah. Or third eye. Third eye, I think is the other name as spiritual wisdom. Right. Yeah. Or spiritual vision. I think I think it should be called first eye. Right? Because when we are born, before we are born, actually, everything started from there. Embroidery, and then that is the energy of embroidery. And then when they grow, then they extend out. Then our eyes, our noses, our skin, ears, or lips, all this kind of external sensational senses are the extensions of our so-called third eye. So it should be the first eye. Since you mentioned this anyway, it's just very...
That's very true. I mean, if you look at the yogic literature, the yogic history, the third eye is the final point of the spinal column and the kundalini energy. And like you pointed out, we are essentially, if you look at it from a reptilian standpoint, we are the serpent. But then on top of that, we have the more recent version of our brain, and you know, we have our, you know, facial features and things that maybe differentiate us from an animal, or for that matter, a reptile. But if you look at it, we are ascending that energy just like a serpent. And it, you know, sort of culminates in the third eye in India, or maybe in yoga, it's called Ajna. And like you pointed out, spiritual eye. So my question to you is, I mean, it's very fascinating what you share. And I'm sure, like you pointed out, your abilities were enhanced after that, you know, fasting journey, that fasting experience. But are you able to light a fire or send an electrical shock using your qi, using qigong?
Well,
because you said zapping, you use some zapping,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Doing this, the start of fire. That kind of, this is also kind of, we say this kind of spiritual energy converted in some physical manifestations. there are different levels. One level is that, actually this is a high level, is that you go from spirituality to spirituality. It's like my master, he can talk with animals. Yeah. Actually, he can talk with me. I still feel his spirit with me. Even he passed away as a physical body in 1985. Yeah. Still like all the time. So that is very, very high level that you convert energy into different vibes. Yeah. And one of the vibes is that you can convert this spiritual power into a physics manifestations. Yeah. Like lighting the fire, right? Projecting energy, lighting the fire. And, I did this. Yeah. I did this. Or just use a banknote, piece of money. Cut the chopsticks, like my master doing the chest, but I sometimes take a piece of paper and boom, chop off your chopsticks. That's also the way of, or you hold the clock, yeah, to make the clock stops, all those kind of things are just different ways. And, it takes your time to develop one way or the others. Some people, they're more interested because it's like a beautiful show. So they spend a lot of time to this kind of show. Yeah. It's still spiritual power in some way. Mm. The others is more make it converted into the way of communication or healing. Yeah, or healing. So that's why the zapping power, actually we get the name of zapping power because when I put people, they feel like zapped.
They feel that way.
So okay. we call it zapping power. Yeah, okay. Zapping power. So, and actually, I think I have a YouTube episode that I zapped. I zapped the Prime Minister of Australia. Yeah, it's so funny. Yeah, because he was the one who brought me to the Western world. When I was in the university, of course, I began to study university. Then, especially after my master was dead in 1985, I was still not graduated from university yet. All of a sudden, actually that year was a very sad year for me. My mother passed away, my grandfather passed away, my master passed away, all in 1985. So it's like, I feel like so overwhelmed. So it took me quite a few months to really like, to find like what I was supposed to do. Yeah. Cause I always, suddenly I feel I lost the lead. So I need to lead myself. Then I began to teach. Yeah, I began to teach. I graduated and I was asked to teach English as my profession in the university. But in my spare time, I began to teach Qigong, right? And then after about 2 years of teaching Qigong, it's getting very popular. Then the campus was a bit worried because, you know, I teach, all my students are the college students. They like to do the hard Qigong. You know, the hard Qigong? Yeah. We don't have the marbles, so we have the beer bottle, boom, smash on head, left, lying on the nail bed, like the bed, making all the nails, having the truck run over the body, all this kind of stunning show. Then the president of the university was not so happy because he didn't want to have people killed, in his campus. It's huge responsibility for him.
Plus, they don't want people who are strong also, right? They might feel that there might be an uprising or, you know, like a revolt or something.
Not really. No? That part, he's okay. Yeah, okay. In one way, he enjoyed it.
Okay.
But the other side, his
safety.
Well, I know it's not dangerous, but for them, as an ordinary person, it's like you're killing yourself. What if someone get killed when you're doing this demonstration in the campus? He, as a master, as a president of the university, he has huge, you know, responsibilities. I got some disencouragement. Then when the mother colleague said, we should maybe go outside. This is like something restricted you. So in this way, we went to Hainan because Hainan, you know, China opened the door slowly, slowly, or Hainan, Shenzhen, then begin to have more freedom. So I said, we should start fresh in a new place, not overseas. We're not able to go to America or whatever it is, but let's go to they call it free economic zone. So a lot of new policies that is not so conservative. So over there, very quickly, I met a lot of, you know, VIP people, the officials. Then they introduced me some high profile people. So one day, the Prime Minister was Australia, was visiting that province. Then the governor of the province was my patient and my student. So he find that Bob Hawke, actually he passed away 2 years ago. And Bob Hawke, he find he's a little bit crippling. He said, what happened to you? And so I do tennis and hurt my back. He said, maybe you should have a Qigong session. I said, what is Qigong? He said, you know. So he brought him to my clinic. Then I did him the treatment. He was amazed. He said, well, I've never had this in my life. Can you treat my daughter? I said, what's happened to your daughter? He said, she had chronic fatigue syndrome. Well, I didn't major in medical. I know English a little bit, but chronic fatigue syndrome. I said, can you explain this? I don't know what that means. Yeah. Then he explained that they said when she has the first child, she lost a little blood, then he got very tired. In wintertime, for three months, she could hardly get up. So it's like very disabled mentally and physically. Then I said, well, let's have a try. So he flew his daughter to China, where I practice, and we treated her, and meanwhile taught her the Yi Jing Jing you mentioned. The Yi Jing Jing, the classic of changes, taught her some Qigong practice, and also treated her, and she was totally recovered. Then when she returned, her friends couldn't recognize her, because she was only 36 at that time, but she looked like 50 years old, because she looked old. But when she returned, she looks young again. Her friends, whoa, what happened to you? So then they begin to put in the story, in the Women's Weekly, in the Sydney Morning Herald, all those stories. Then, of course, people ask, so what happened? Yeah, can we invite the master? Yeah. Then Bob Hawke, the prime minister, said, you should go to Australia. They have beautiful energy there. So that's how I made the trip to Australia. And actually, I lived in Australia for 7 years before I came to America.
That is so amazing. It just speaks to the idea that sometimes a lot of people are trying to, you know, use this strategy, that strategy to get popular, to get known, to get seen. Whereas in your case, all you focused on is on yourself and really building your abilities, your skills, not focusing on, you know, marketing, so to say, initially. But then at the right time, at the right moment, the right person had the challenge, and the right person who trusted you was recommended, and one thing led to the other. And then you started being published and written about because you were showing the results for the, you know, for the prime minister's daughter. And that led to a crescendo effect. So I love what you shared over there. Now, for somebody...
You're so right. Yeah. Like that province, you know, the gold will shine itself. Yeah. And that's what I'm keeping as my principle. I have to tell you, so far, I put $0 on advertising.
Really?
Not at all. I think we just need to present the best thing. Yeah. And of course we have database, we send newsletters, but yeah. to have commercial, I don't feel that is my type. Yeah. And I enjoy this way because, you can be very focused at what you do and let what you do to speak. And I'm also feel very blessed. And I think maybe it's my master because he made that kind of maneuver and everything. It's very interesting. You think you made the decision yourself, but if I look back from what I have experienced all my life from now on, I find at very many turning points, there's always feel like there's a magic hand making your chest to move. It is way beyond my own power. It must be some magic power to make it. So I feel so blessed at every time, like my transition time, I have some, in Chinese, some people or some really wonderful people to help you to transit. They're the same way for me to come to America. I've never planned to come to America. Yeah, it just happened that, like, because I was in Australia and doing the practice and having this training, and I got my permanent residency there. I decided to reside in Australia. I love Sydney. It's beautiful, especially the seafood there and beach. Yeah, I love it. But then one day, and also I was practicing in Sue Hawk's home because she has a big house. His daughter, she has a big house. So for 4 years, we were there and actually said, don't bother of finding the other place. Just practice in my home. I give you 2 rooms. Then you can do this as a clinic. Yeah. Then one day she called me when I was having a day off. On Monday, I was having a day off, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And then she said, Robert, there's a lady coming from America and wants to see whether you can see her. but I know it's your off day, but I want to check. I said, that's fine. I'm not doing anything. So I drove 40 minutes. I drove back to my clinic, her house. Then there's a lady, beautiful, blonde, actually, yeah. She said, actually, she had ovarian cancer and had a chemotherapy. But after the chemotherapy, she feel there's a spiritual call that she need to make a trip.
That is
to Uluru. You know Uluru?
Uluru
Ellis Rock. Before it's
called
Ellis Rocks.
Yeah,
in Australia, Ellis Green.
Turns red, turns brown sometimes.
Several miles, one piece of stone, several miles huge.
Yeah.
So it's a sacred place for Aborigines. So she felt a very urge call to go there for her spirituality after this like experience of chemotherapy operation and everything. Yeah. And then in Sydney, she has to change the plane in Sydney, go to Alice Springs. But I say, very interesting. That day when she went to the airport, the traffic just froze.
Okay.
So she missed the plane.
Yeah.
Then, of course, missed the plane, then she told her companion, who is also a film producer, she said, well, can you find a like sort of organic restaurant that we can have meal?
Yeah.
So when she was in her restaurant, she saw on the other table there's a piece of paper. Yeah.
Okay.
Then she said, oh, let me, so she took the piece of paper, read the paper. Actually, it's the photocopy of a story of my interview in the Sydney Morning Herald. The weekend. Then she read it. And she was very smart. She said, oh, now I know why I missed the plane. I'm supposed to meet this person. At the bottom, there's phone number and the address. So she just boldly drove to there, knocking at the door, and for nearly 10 minutes, because nobody answered the door, until she nearly gave up. Then he see from that, that windows, glazed window, and coming, and then open the door by a woman wrapped with a bath towel. That is the prime minister's daughter. She was taking a bath. When she's knocking the door, buzzing, at first she thought maybe it's some postman, but it's never stopped. Then she said, well, what on earth? So she wrapped herself open. Then that's her. That's how we met. Then after the treatment, of course, after treatment, she felt so, so much better.
Yeah.
Then she said, Robert, I want to see you again. I say, of course, no problem. Yeah. He said, I want to see you again when I return from Ayers Rocks. Yeah. I said, okay. Mm-hmm. So when she returned, she called me. Then I went to the hotel and did her second treatment. And she said, can I film that? I said, yeah, of course. Yeah. So she has the other companion filming that. I thought he was just doing the home video. Actually, it's a professional video producer. Because when she find out she had ovarian cancer, she said, I want to hire someone to film my story, my journey of dealing with my cancer. So she brought her producer with her, filming all this. Later, she put this actually in this section when I was doing her treatment in her documentary. She made a documentary called Angel Walks.
Angel Walks?
Yeah, Angel Walks. I don't know whether she put it. I have a copy here, but I don't know whether she ever put it in public. Yeah, that is like 20 years ago, nearly. So, at that time, actually, it was high definition. But nowadays, you can use the camera to find. Anyway,
So
I was stunned. And then afterwards, she said, well, Robert, you should go to New York. I said, well, if you arrange that, I'm happy to have a visit. I thought maybe there's another person, because a lot of people say this, offer, then nothing happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I thought, then a few months later, she called from New York. I said, Robert, do you want to come? I said, okay, sure. What time is good? Then we look at the calendar. Oh, Easter. Because Easter in Australia is the hardest, is the time begin to get cold. Yeah, here is warmer, right? Yeah. So Easter we have longer. This is about 20 days of vacations. I said, well, I go there. So she bought me tickets and went there. Amazingly, her husband is a plastic surgeon, very famous plastic surgeon. I don't know whether you heard, because you're not from America, but a lot of American knew about 20 or 25 years ago.
Yeah.
At that time, you know, New York City was not so safe. A lot of, in the Central Park, there's a girl jogging in the Central Park and she was raped and her face was destroyed. Oh. And then her face was fixed by a plastic surgeon. That's her husband. So he got very popular and famous. So when there, she introduced a lot of patients and students for me. Then she said, Robert, you have patients now. You should come here again. Yeah. So that's how it started. See, all this are linking together and leading you to that. Then, of course, after 2 years back and forth, then I do some time in Australia, sometimes in New York. If you're, at that time, you know, the internet is still not that common. So when I went back to Australia after 3 months, it took me like about a month to recover. I have like several hundred of voicemail on my phone. I have to clear it. So practically it's difficult. Then I have to decide whether I stay in Australia or in America. I have to just choose one, not both. I have to choose either. Then I said, New York City, for sure. That's the center of the world. Yeah. Like in one trip, I met more different races of people than I have my whole life in China, including in Australia. People from Papua New Guinea, from some island I've never heard. They all come here in New York speaking English with very strong accent, but they think they speak the best English very confidently. Yeah. I say, that's the place I want to live and start my Qigong as a good anchor. Yeah, so that's amazing. Yeah, so it's all this. You're blessed. I'm blessed. I'm led by the energy of life to brought me from one place to another.
That is very, very true. And so much of what you're sharing actually resonates in my life as well. And I feel almost as though this interaction that we're having right now is mystical, because I believe that one thing leads to the other, and maybe the universe or my higher self or your higher self wants to have this interaction. Because, you know, like in mid last year, my mom passed away. You know, and I have been, you know, I consider myself a strong person, like spiritually, emotionally, but I've been feeling very lost, you know, like lost or maybe like weak. And I've been trying to do a lot of inner work to see, you know, what my direction is, what my purpose is, and what my reason is to do my best work here on earth. So, you know, and I've been getting a lot of insights as well. And a lot of people have been coming my way, totally to your point, you know, just trying to focus on myself and, you know, do experiments in terms of healing and trying out different things. And something surprising happened, like out of nowhere, there was this gentleman who was actually a Hollywood director reached out to me. And he said that he'd been listening to my podcast and he wants to try out the breath work. And so he hired me once. I went to his place. He loved it, and we've been meeting a lot, and, you know, we've developed a sort of friendship now. And then out of nowhere, so a behavioral researcher, you know, reaches out and, you know, wants to have a session. So obviously you're a master, and I'm, you know, still on my journey and learning things, but I totally believe, and I'm sure our listeners believe as well, that there's something out there that is orchestrating all of this. You know, it's not just us, you know, taking action. There's something out there that's working through us, and it speaks to Qigong as well, because you talk about two types of Qigong practice, right? One is where you're practicing by yourself and you're trying to cultivate the Qi, and the other is where the Qi is working for you, working through you, and working in you. So can you, you know, help us understand the difference between the two? And are they, does the second version happen at a certain stage in your practice, or what's the difference like? The other question that was connected to the first was, does the Qi start working in that second way only after some practice, after years of practice, or after months of practice?
No, it depends. Yeah, it depends. It depends on the gift of the people. It also depends on, well, Qi is energy. Everybody has Qi. Yeah. Actually, I have a lot of questions from my students. Because a lot of students say, especially they ask, because I have a healer's course, like you do the healing on others. Like the master key, the book you mentioned, is that you practice on your own. But I have other courses to become a healer. You work on other people. You put hands on people. You do the remote. You do a sword finger or magic palm, all this kind of healing energy techniques. Then the most common questions is some people they ask, they say, Robert, I am sick. I'm a patient. Can I do the healing? The answer is absolutely yes. Yeah. The energy, when you know how to channel it, magic can happen. Yeah. It, of course, the more you do, the more experienced you are, the more connected with your energy, with the universe, the more resourced you are, the more powerful you are. But as soon as you open the channel, the energy begin to flow through you. We are the medium. We're the medium, right? You can do the energy healing right away. Yeah. Like my training is 14 days of training. The very first day I begin to teach them, they begin to work on each other. Yeah. And they're amazed. They say, oh my God, that's incredible. They begin to feel the energy right away. And actually, a lot of masters, including myself, started as a patient, started as a sick person, because only the sick person can really thoroughly comprehend what the sickness feels like. Yeah. And then they have much more profound understanding for feeling of sick and understanding feeling of healthy. And they have beautiful energies they can. So you go to different stages, but you can start right away. Absolutely. No matter how old. I have students who is 90 years old.
Yeah.
And after 3 months of practice, they bring the chopstick, they bring the chopstick, put it against the throat. Bang! They break it. And at that moment, I saw the eyes open up. They don't believe themselves. Yeah. And when they do the remote healing, they say, wow, I'm 90 years old. Can I do that? I can. That is best reward I feel to share this. Because you are not doing it on your own, which like it's impossible for you to treat everybody. Yeah. But when you can pass them and allow all the others to do the healing, to teach, to share this, I cannot describe how beautiful that feeling is. And I feel how grateful to my master. Yeah. Because when he was with me, he didn't charge me any money at all. Right. Actually, he's paying me all everything. So he's from everything he has, he just wants me to be able to do something that can benefit all the other people. Oh, yes. So it's changing. Like, I cannot imagine that what my life will be without the chance of meeting him and doing my Qigong. So someone asked me, well, if you have another life, what do you want to do? I want to do Qigong, of course. Yeah. Because Qigong is also spiritual, right? It can be spiritual. We live in a materialist life, and if you don't have that spiritual part, you're only living half life. The better half are lost. Yeah.
Yeah.
That can be from your meditation, from your spirituality cultivations, from just simple as what you taught. Just the breathing itself can give you such a big joy and satisfaction and achievement for yourself, right? Mm.
So I wanted to ask this question. I know we are coming towards the end of our wonderful discussion, and I feel that I can speak with you for hours and hours because you have so much to share. But do you watch Hollywood movies?
Hollywood movie?
Do you watch, for example, you know, the Doctor Strange? Have you seen that movie?
Doctor Strange? I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because there's a lot of conversation, you know, maybe in comics, maybe in sci-fi, and, you know, people have been studying stories from time, you know, from ages, right? But there's this concept of the multiverse, where you are interacting with different dimensions and different beings, right? Now, obviously, you've spent so many years, right, cultivating your energy, activating your extrasensory powers. And I'm sure by now that, are you able to perceive, like, things that a normal, you know, human being who has not activated their abilities would consider, you know, bizarre or out of the blue? And what I'm talking specifically about, you know, what are your thoughts on imaginary beings like the Yeti that they say is found up in the mountains, or the snow monster, Do you know these beings that people, some people say they have seen, and yet some people, you know, just dismiss it as just a figment of their imagination? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it depends. Yeah, sometimes what my experience is that it doesn't happen if you want to plan with this. It just happens itself. If I'm trying to search someone to be my next generation disciples,
yeah,
it's impossible. Yeah. Then one day it comes, then I see someone, then it's like, click, bullseye, that's it. That can happen. Yeah, that can happen. Not necessarily that you have to be physically together. Sometimes I have a lot of students, the patients are like this. One email, I can feel the very strong vibes. Or one voicemail, I feel the strong vibes. I feel, this is the right person that I can teach something. And that happens. Yeah. I agree with you. It is true. It depends on what kind of level. Yeah. Cause you have the grandmaster. Like my master finding me, I'm sure he finds some vibes before even he meet me that he was attracted to that special local place working as a boiler room attendant for 20 years and seems just waiting for me to meet. That's incredible.
But you would agree that there are certain beings that, you know, when you activate your, you know, your abilities, you're able to, at the right time, given the right context.
I think so. Yeah. If I do deep meditation, it will happen. It happens when you are in deep meditation, that kind of vibes, because, the vibrations, the vibes of each everything of each human beings, they are like countless of yin yang, you know, yin and yang. Yin yang, is a concept that Taoists use, but actually that is the universal law that they find to explain everything in the universe. Like, say for example now, the Big Bang, right? Big Bang, before Big Bang is zero. Big Bang is one, boom, right? Then the moment of Big Bang started, we begin to have polarity, that is yin and yang, right? Yin and yang. Well, nowadays, actually, the quantum physics are proving this. The moment when you have Big Bang, we begin to have matter, right? Then it confuses us for thousands of years since the human being's consciousness, I say, we have matter. Then they don't know that the thought is the yin part of the energy. We have matter as a solid part of energy. Now, another pair of yin-yang is matter and empty matter, right? That is another pair of yin-yang. Matter and counter-matter. Dark matter, yeah. It's like south and north. They are embracing each other. They're the one thing happening at the same time. So when we are in the meditation, we begin to allow all that kind of yin-yang vibes to manifest. Then when you channel to one of the yin-yang channel, leading to finding you mental, for you mental disciple, when that you begin to see that.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all this wisdom and knowledge and stories with all of us, people that are listening right now or maybe listening to this episode once it goes onto our various streaming platforms. Is there any parting piece of advice that you'd like to give somebody who is listening to this episode right now, something that you would like to share before?
I have my website.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
And also I have my Facebook, which I don't do a lot, but I can share on the Facebook too. My wife is taking care of it. And I have my newsletter. So when you have it ready, tell me, then I'm going to share it. Absolutely. I'm going to share it. And thank you. You are amazing. Yeah. You are so good at, you know, make us to talk. You're a genius.
Thank you so much. It makes it much more easier when I, you know, I'm in conversation with a person like you. So,
actually, I have a, I don't know whether you on your side, I have a, because my story, what I mentioned, the story was in my book, the Master Key book, the first 100 pages, my story. And I also recorded 4 hours with my own voice, narrate the story. So if you like, I can offer to your audience that you can have them to download free as a gift that I can present them.
Sure. Yeah. What you can do is maybe after this episode, we'll just discuss the links, and then I will add the links onto my website so that, you know, people can go.
So you can download. Okay.
Download and learn more about you and all the amazing work that you've done. But thanks a lot once again for appearing on our show, Action Tribe. If you enjoyed this episode, and I'm sure you did, then make sure that you share this episode with your friends and family, because all of them need to know, as well as reach out to me on if you have any feedback, any advice, you can send me an email, aj@my7chakras.com, or you can just DM me on Instagram @my7chakras. That's @my7chakras. I love to connect with all of our listeners. And are you available on Instagram as well? Are you active at all on Instagram?
Not really. Sorry, I have my yeah. I have my account. I never used it. Instagram. I have my Facebook. I never touched it. Yeah, but we have someone to take care of it, so they put something on my information. I do most. 100%. Yeah, the most I do is my newsletter. I do newsletter every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Because I have a special practice to go with the season.
Yeah.
In China, we call it jiqi, the mini season. Every 2 weeks, there's a mini season. Then I have a special practice to empower one of the vertebrae. So I follow that rhythm. Every 2 weeks, I tell them, I send the newsletter to tell them that is the time you practice. I offer it free for everybody in my community. Then they can practice to empower. Then the whole year, if you do it only once for every 15 days, the whole year, all 24 articular vertebrae are taken care of. So, then, of course, then I have my information. Like I can share what we talked on that newsletter. Yeah, on my website. That's what I do on YouTube. I do it myself.
So actually, try to make sure that you join Robert Peng's newsletter. And he's done so much work. If you just go to Google and you search his name, Robert Peng, you'll see many results pop up, especially his website. But we'll add the link onto the show notes as well, so that you, when you go to our website, my7chakras.com, you search for Robert Peng, you will find his episode along with all the post, the show notes links that we are going to upload as soon as this episode goes live. So Robert, thank you so much for appearing on our show, talking to us about so many different things, the Qigong and you know, your spiritual experience and the story of how you met your master. It was really fascinating for me, and I'm sure it is for our listeners as well. I hope you have a nice day ahead.
Thank you, Aditya. Yeah, Aditya. And thank you for your interview. It's a beautiful time for me. Yeah, I hope to see you again someday.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my seven chakras.com.